Hi, this is Tyson Brown with NSTA Press. This marks our third installment of NSTA Press Behind the Books. Today I'm talking with Bill Robertson, author of Stop Faking It, Finally Understanding Science So You Can Teach It, Math, a book written for everyone who lacks the background to teach with confidence and is tired of relying on avoidance strategies. Bill, welcome.
Thanks, Tyson. It's good to be here.
Bill, why do you think there is such a need for this sort of book?
Tyson, you know, the rationale for this book started a long time ago when I was teaching college physics. And I would get students in the physics class, you know, often very bright students, you know, physics majors, and we would be doing some kind of math procedure, and I'd stop them and I'd say, you know, why is the length times the width? Why does that give you the area of this rectangle?
Mm-hmm.
Most of them didn't really understand. They didn't had no idea. And that was kind of my first clue that students were doing the rules of math without really understanding the reasoning behind the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, in observing, when I started writing curriculum, I observed a lot of elementary and middle school classrooms, and I saw a lot of teachers doing things step by step. For instance, if you're adding fractions, there are certain procedures. You do this, you do this, you do this, and you do this. And there was no discussion of the reasoning as to why is this the appropriate step to do. And so I notice that there's just a whole lot of that kind of instruction. And it's not just math. It's in all of science that there's this kind of memorized step-by-step procedure going on. And so, you know, the whole idea is that I want to help teachers have a tool that will help them understand these things at a deep level.
All right. Well, this is your first foray outside of Earth and Physical Sciences, which you explore in the other Stop Faking It titles. Why math and why now?
You know that we always wanted to do a math book. The plan was, when I started writing these books, that we would do a math book eventually. I've had a passion for doing this for math for a long time, so finally we got to do it.
Great. Many of the math rules you discuss in the book, you've already characterized as having sort of a rote use. Often the user doesn't understand why they're doing what they're doing. Why would it matter in a science class?
You know, first of all, there's nothing wrong with memorization and rote use. I mean, if you don't know your multiplication tables, you're going to be in trouble in trying to understand higher level concepts. So memorization in and of itself is not a bad thing. But the reason that you need a little deeper understanding than that mm-hmm. is that sometimes very fundamental ideas can contribute to your understanding of higher level ideas. And for example, in physics, a lot of times you deal with the concept of surface area and how quantities spread out as they spread out from a point out into the universe. If you don't have a solid understanding of what surface area is, then you cannot understand those concepts. At an even more abstract level, some of the most basic, what you might think of as memorized procedures, get challenged in different kinds of theories. And for example, now not everyone's going to be studying the general theory of relativity, Einstein's theory, but in that theory, the simple idea of parallel lines no longer holds. And if you're going to understand the new situation where parallel lines are no longer parallel, and there's a new procedure for understanding that, you better understand the old procedure, and you better understand it at a deep level rather than just superficially.
You employ the learning cycle method when tackling each concept, and I think that probably relates to what you were just talking about. Could you explain why it works so well?
There's lots of cognitive science research, and I do have a background in cognitive psychology as well as physics. There's lots of research that shows that when you do understand something at a deep level, that amounts to a rich set of connections between the concepts that you're studying and your experiences. And they've done a lot of things called expert-novice studies, mm-hmm. where they take people who are experts in the field and people who are brand new to the field, and they try and figure out, okay, what's the difference between these people? Who, you know, how does this expert organize his or her knowledge? How does the novice organize his or her knowledge? And it turns out that the experts have these rich connections. They have a more well-rounded understanding of the concept in terms of connecting to the things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how this applies to the learning cycle. What the learning cycle does is provide a set of experiences where you can set up the learner and help the learner connect the ideas, the concepts to be learned, to these experiences. So you're helping them make those connections rather than just throwing out these kind of abstract ideas. And that's, you know, traditional teaching is that. You give an abstract lecture. You read a book that has abstract ideas. And if you don't help people make these connections, what they end up doing is, and we're back to memorizing, you tend to memorize those things rather than understand them by connecting them to other things. And so it turns out, you know, the learning cycle is just a great way of doing this. It's not clear that the learning cycle is absolutely the best way to do this. It probably isn't. There are other ways, I'm sure, but it sure is effective. And so it certainly works for me, and it works for a lot of other people, too.
How would you like teachers to use this book?
That's a great question, because there's sometimes a misunderstanding of how I would like people to use the book. And I would include not just teachers, but parents who, you know, help their kids with homework. A lot of times teachers think that these are books of activities and that they're supposed to use in the classroom. The reason that's such a common perception is that most of the resource books out there are exactly that. They are books of activities. All the science books, math books, here's some neat stuff you can use in your classroom. And so that's what they're used to looking for. My books are not intended as that. Now, there are activities in there because I base it around the learning cycle, but the activities are there in order to help the teacher learn the concept. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to help the teacher gain that deep understanding. With that deep understanding comes the comfort level so that you can teach with confidence, that you can know more than you'll ever have to teach. And I think most teachers can relate to that. When you know a whole lot more than your students, it's fun. When you are trying to stay one step ahead of them, it's not very much fun. It's an uncomfortable process. So I'm trying to give them that comfort level. So to the point that I want them to understand, for instance, there's a chapter on calculus in the math book. Most of the people who pick up this book, who buy it, are not going to be teaching calculus to their students. But it sure is nice to have an understanding of the basics of calculus when you're doing other things, so that, you know, and especially when that, you know, one kid says, well, my dad says, or my mom says such and such, then you actually kind of know what the kid's talking about, which is kind of a nice feeling.
Well, let's talk for a moment about how you have collaborated with others on this book. For instance, you work with Brian Diskin on the illustration. Brian Diskin's illustrations help make the book even more accessible. How do you work together to incorporate the drawings into the narrative?
First of all, I should mention, Brian and I worked together for a full 2.5 years before I ever met him in person. And that kind of gives you an indication of the process. Mm-hmm. First of all, there are two kinds of illustrations. One is a technical illustration, and that's if we're doing an activity and I need him to illustrate the apparatus the person needs to put together, or if I'm explaining a concept and I want him to draw a model of an atom or a magnetic field or any such thing. What I will do is make sketches, mm-hmm. and poorly, and then I will scan those and send them off to him, and then he tries to interpret what it is I've put together. He does a preliminary sketch and sends those back to me, and so we go back and forth a little bit on that, because usually my sketches are poor and he doesn't quite understand what he's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But we get all those technical things put together, and then after the book is reviewed by outside reviewers, then they come back to me with comments, and there's probably some alterations of the illustrations after that. And then he does some final artwork. The other thing he does is just add humor to it. Mm-hmm. Each chapter in every book has some kind of artwork as a header. And that is, sometimes it comes through a combination of him and me working together. For instance, in the sound book, there was a chapter on music, and so I titled the chapter, The Hills Are Alive. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, Brian, come back with, you know, obviously you should do something with Maria Von Trapp. And he comes back with something that's absolutely hilarious, right? And he usually takes whatever ideas I have, he takes them and runs with them. Mm-hmm. Other times he just comes up with something hilarious all by himself.
He surprises you sometimes.
Oh, he really does. I laugh out loud when I get most of his stuff. He's very, very creative. And he will even do stuff like, he'll get the whole book in his mind, and then he'll come up with a character, for instance, that he'd like to keep in common throughout the whole book. He did that in the Electricity and Magnetism book. There was a Mr. Energy Man And he just said, you know, this guy's pretty funny. I'm going to keep him in illustration after illustration throughout the book. So, like I said, two things. He's great at technical illustrations, and he's also just great at providing humor. And then, of course, his cover art is what makes people pick him up.
Bill, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to me today. For more information about Stop Faking It Math, including a sample chapter called Fractions and More Rules, go to www.nsta.org and click on the Science Store. This is Tyson Brown signing off from NSTA Press.